that it can only be pulled off with the assistance of divide-and-conquer racial and sexual politics, as well as a nonstop spectacle of media distractions. And, of course, it is being backed up with a massive increase in war spending, a dramatic escalation of military conflicts on multiple fronts, from Syria to North Korea, alongside presidential musings about how torture works. Trump's cabinet of billionaires and multimillionaires tells us a great deal about the administration's underlying goals. ExxonMobil for Secretary of State, General Dynamics and Boeing to head the Department of Defense, and the Goldman Sachs guys for pretty much everything that's left. The handful of career politicians who have been put in charge of agencies seem to have been selected either because they do not believe in the agency's core mission or do not think the agency should exist at all. Steve Bannon, Trump's apparently sidelined chief strategist, was very open about this when he addressed a conservative audience in February 2017. The goal, he said, was the deconstruction of the administrative state, by which he meant the government regulations and agencies tasked with protecting people and their rights. And if you look at these cabinet nominees, they were selected for a reason, and that is deconstruction. Much has been made of the conflict between Bannon's Christian nationalism and the transnationalism of Trump's more establishment aides, particularly his son-in-law Jared Kushner. And Bannon may well get voted off this gory reality show entirely before long, perhaps by the time you read these words. Which is why it's worth underlining that when it comes to deconstructing the state and outsourcing as much as possible to for-profit corporations, Bannon and Kushner are not in conflict, but in perfect alignment. As this has been unfolding, it struck me that what's happening in Washington is not the usual passing of the baton between parties. It's a naked corporate takeover, one many decades in the making. It seems that the economic interests that have long since paid off both major parties to do their bidding have decided they're tired of playing the game. Apparently, all that whining and dining of elected officials, all that cajoling and legalized bribery, insulted their sense of divine entitlement. So now they're cutting out the middlemen, those needy politicians who are supposed to protect the public interest, and doing what all top dogs do when they want something done right. They're doing it themselves. Which is why serious questions about conflicts of interest and breaches of ethics barely receive a response. Just as Trump stonewalled on releasing his tax returns, so he has completely refused to sell or to stop benefiting from his business empire. That decision, given the Trump Organization's reliance on foreign governments to grant valuable trademark licenses and permits, may in fact contravene the United States Constitution's prohibition on presidents receiving gifts or emolument from foreign governments. Indeed, a lawsuit making this allegation has already been launched. But the Trumps seem unconcerned, a near impenetrable sense of impunity, of being above the usual rules and laws, is a defining feature of this administration. Anyone who presents a threat to that impunity is summarily fired. Just ask former FBI Director James Comey. Up to now in U.S. politics, there's been a mask on the corporate state's White House proxies. The smiling actor's face of Ronald Reagan or the faux cowboy persona of George W. Bush, with Dick Cheney, Halliburton scowling in the background. Now the mask is gone, and no one is even bothering to pretend otherwise. This situation is made all the more squalid by the fact that Trump was never the head of a traditional company, but has, rather, long been the figurehead of an empire built around his personal brand, a brand that has, along with his daughter Ivanka's brand, already benefited from its merger with the U.S. presidency in countless ways. The Trump family's business model is part of a broader shift in corporate structure that has taken place within many brand-based multinationals, one with transformative impacts on culture and the job market, trends that I wrote about in my first book, No Logo, Taking Aim at the Brand Bullies. What this model tells us is that the very idea that there could be or should be any distinction between the Trump brand and the Trump presidency is a concept the current occupant of the White House cannot begin to comprehend. The presidency is, in fact, the crowning extension of the Trump brand. As I explored Trump's inextricable relationship with his commercial brand and its implication for the future of politics, I began to see why so many of the attacks on him have failed to stick, and how we can identify ways of resisting him that will be more effective. The fact that such defiant levels of profiteering from public office can unfold in full view is disturbing enough, as are so many of Trump's actions in his first months in office. But history shows us that, however destabilized things are now, the shock doctrine means they could get a lot worse. The main pillars of Trump's political and economic project are the deconstruction of the regulatory state, a full-bore attack on the welfare state,